This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Football, bit of hockey, and fantasy wrestling show? Yes. Yes, people. It's NFL offseason, and we're bringing some fantasy wrestling to you as well. And it could mean that you win some free pizza. So stay tuned for that. We got a great show coming up today. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Andy. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, whenever you say it's the NFL offseason, that sentence can immediately be followed by literally anything. Literally yes. Anything. We could go in any direction during the NFL offseason, like with brief pauses for things like the combine today and the NFL draft and like maybe some free agency stuff here and there. We could literally do anything we want. So yeah, fantasy wrestling. You pitched the idea to me, to Santos, and everyone was on board. So I'm excited. I freely admit I am not as well versed in AEW as I am in WWE, but I am excited to do these picks. I am.
Right, and I was going to say, I pitched it to both of you, and neither of you could think of a better idea, so here we are. We're also pumped to have our guest at the top of the hour, our good buddy Russell Brown, national scout for Cover One and host of the NFL Draft Podcast. Combine, which means show. You hear that? Listen, folks, you hear this? You hear that paper? That's real. That is my Combine notebook. It is filled. I texted Show, what was a couple nights ago? It was like 11:30 at night. I'm like, I'm going through the quarterbacks, and I'm just watching, note-taking, deciphering. I feel like I'm that gift where it's Zach Galifianakis and all the numbers and stuff are going around. All of it, Show. I'm ready.
It's true, yeah. That gift, the Winona Ryder gift, like the numbers flying around her head. Yeah, it's like I'll put all of those in there, and that's what I look like when I think of Andy's notebook. But yeah, I am looking forward to it. I gotta say, I've said this to you before, when it comes to the combine and how I feel like now, especially now, like in the era where you know guys are wearing like. You know, like microchipped shoes and like, you know, some vests and stuff when they run the 40 and do all the various cone drills and all that stuff, that I'm not sure it really has too much of an effect on the guys who are going in the upper half of the, you know, the draft, maybe the guys on the top two rounds or whatever. But at the same time, like, I think it was, I don't know if it was last night or the night before, what have you, but it was, you know, over the last couple of days, Jordan Davis out of Georgia, I think it was, the defensive tackle. He people are talking about his combine performance in the same way they talked about, like, remember when Adrian Peterson was at the combine or when Megatron was at the combine? Like, they were doing like ridiculous things and people were like, oh my God. And maybe that's because also that was kind of before the era of social media or like before it really became as popular as it is today. But Jordan Davis is being talked about kind of in the same breath now, it feels like.
Oh, that dude. Yes. But, listen, we'll talk about my combine crushes in a bit. I pick one on each side of the ball. Spoiler show, it's Jordan Davis. It's Jordan. Good Lord. Like, can we go through the stats? The look of this guy. This is a once in a while, and I said this about DK Metcalf from the wide receiver group a couple years ago when he came out.
Right.
And Myles Garrett before that. There just seems to be certain athletes, show, that you look at and you're like, oh, well, if you were to fast forward humanity a few thousand years. That's what the evolution of like the perfect human species would be like.
Yeah.
But
Aaron Donald.
Here today. Yeah, like they're here right now. Yeah. They're super freakishly big, but they're also really fast. And if they catch you, it's over. This dude is almost 6'7" tall, 341 pounds, and ran 4.78 seconds in the 40-yard dash. To put that in perspective for you guys, that is as For that size and speed, if you were to put that on a smaller guy, that's like running a 4.25 for a little receiver, right, Joe? Like that's yeah, incredible yeah. numbers.
I think they had seen NFL Network, and I say every year that one of my favorite things is watching Rich Eisen run the 40. But you know, because of that, you see often when players have a spectacular time, they'll like overlay like this year's time with like guys from years past, right? We've seen that a bunch when Eisen does it in the media because it's funny, but they do it for like actual players too. And They had done it for Jordan Davis, and I don't know if you saw this, Baker Mayfield. It was pretty funny.
It was like,
you know what, to be fair, it wasn't just Baker. It was Baker, and they also did it for Jameis Winston, because I guess they were both number one overall picks or whatever, right? So you could see Baker and Jameis do the 40, and then they overlaid on top of the two of them at the same time. So you could see all three of them run Jordan Davis, and Jordan Davis beats them. Like he beats Jameis, wow. I think, by a full like size person, and he beat Baker by I think he beat him by like 0.2 or 0.3 seconds. But you know what? It doesn't really matter, because if you're a 340-pound defensive tackle and you're beating out quarterbacks, that is remarkable, I got to say.
Well, so, and again, how often the trouble with the 40 is, you know, a defensive tackle typically is not going to be running 40 yards at right. any one time. However, it's that speed. And that what it shows is these players, these defensive players, are still getting bigger and they're getting taller, but they're also getting faster. So imagine you catch a quarterback. And that's why I say, when you look at these quarterbacks who come out and are smaller or they're thinner, imagine a guy like Jordan Davis catching you, like Kyler Murray, okay, who's all melting off baseball, wants an extension. Imagine 5'7" Kyler Murray show and Jordan Davis. He would inhale him. He would inhale him as a meal. He might not even notice that he ate him. He's so big. Like, that's like that size of athlete on top grabbing these quarterbacks should be horrifying for QBs coming in. Like, I can't imagine Jordan Davis pushing through an offensive line and being in the face of a QB. And plus, getting those hands up, knocking down balls. This guy's incredible.
That would be like Jordan Davis tackling you or me, essentially what it would be like.
I'm too elusive, show. Quick feet.
No, he would squash you like a pancake.
My thing would be, I would just throw the ball up in the air and go, ah! I would throw it up like a hot potato and run.
Whenever people say stuff like that, I always think to myself, you know, I guarantee you have encountered in real life or on the radio people who say, ah, well, I could have done that. I could have done, as they point to the TV with like potato chips in their mouth, right? Like, I could have done that. I could have scored a goal that Austin Matthews scored. I could have made a basket that LeBron James made, right? Like, I could have done any of those things. Honestly, like, I'm here to just reinforce one more time that the likelihood of any of that is extremely extremely low. You know what? It's not extremely low. It is 0%.
It's zero. I loved your description, show, during the Olympics, where it's like the only time for you where you're on the couch like, I could have done that triple axel sow cow and like just shove like food in your
throat. Rawr, rawr. Pizza, like, yes. Yeah.
Or should be like, oh, I didn't stick the landing. It's like, get out of here. These athletes trade their whole life, 0% body fat, and we're on the couch just saying like, oh, I should have kept that twist tighter. Get out of here. So, that's all part of the fun of sports, though. But yeah, Jordan Davis is a freak show. Going to talk some wide receivers at the for the free agent side, and we'll get it, boy. And on the rookie class coming in show again. Oh my goodness, the depth of this wide receiver class is just. It's incredible. We'll talk to Russell Brown about that. But what that means to me is that if you have a group like this wide receiver class coming in again, Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave out of Ohio State, London Drake, Treylon Burks, Calvin Austin, David Bell, a guy like Velus Jones Jr., all these studs coming out, to me what that means is it lowers, or it should to a certain degree, the value of your non-elite level free agent wide receiver. Because why would I pay a vet who, you know, let's say a Russell Gage, Greg Ward, guys who all might be available, different wideouts, Cole Beasley, when I can get a new guy with no tread on his tires from the NFL for way cheaper than him?
Yeah. Yeah, well, isn't that part of the conversation we've had for, it feels like a really long time, right? Like the idea that maybe teams have finally wisened up to the fact that it's not this. We've had this conversation more like in the tone of running backs, let's say, right? And in the sense that maybe you shouldn't, unless you have someone who is like by far and away the outlier, and maybe even then you shouldn't do it. But you know, maybe it's the time to no longer give gigantic contracts to running backs. I mean, just look at the Dallas Cowboys, right? They're potentially getting rid of Amari Cooper, who is one of I would say, like, all the statistics point, because whenever he was on, when he was not on the field, Dak and CD specifically suffered for it, right, fantasy-wise and in real life. But when he was in the field, the entire offense flowed a little better. So if the Dallas Cowboys do get rid of Amari Cooper, like has been rumored coming out of the combine, I don't know what they're going to do. But if they can replace him with one of the many talented free agents, I think it's going to be a boon to that offense. But the reason they're getting rid of Amari Cooper is not only because he costs a lot of money, is because Ezekiel Elliott is being paid a boatload of money as well. So I think we're finally at the period of time just across the NFL where people are finally – it's not that they're devaluing their own players, but I think they're even more treating players like they are replaceable assets. And I mean, you never want to treat players like they're assets and like not people, but at the same time, I mean, these I mean, look what the Rams did. They completely devalued all of their non-player assets in the, you know, in building their Super Bowl champion football team, right? And now, you know, you have all these other teams who are like, well, we can use those assets and continually have a constant stream of young guys, and as soon as their contract is up in 4 or 5 years, then maybe we can just do it all over again.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Sho, that maybe the NFL is and should, from a business standpoint, start looking at wide receivers in that running back vein. Where now we see, of course, the shelf life is typically longer than your running back, who at his peak is, you know, the 28 years old seems to be sort of that perch where you hit that and then you start getting into trouble for most guys. You know, you can get into your early 30s, but then that elite level sort of drops, depending on the skill set, of course. But that's where I think this makes a whole lot of sense, especially with how college football has been pass heavy for forever. And with the NFL mirroring that, you have ridiculous statistics, faster and faster players coming out each and every year that don't even have to be first round picks. Like, depending what you want to use a guy, like, why, for example, and you know how much I love myself some Christian Kirk, my guy, right? Fantasy possession PPR dream. I love Christian Kirk. But even at 25 years old, becoming an unrestricted free agent, depending what the market shows, I could get in this draft, a third round pick that can be a possession slot guy who can cut, who's fast, for way cheaper and move on. And it's Christian Kirk still probably has another at least 5 good years ahead of him. So I think it's going to be very interesting what this free agent market shows, especially coming off of an offseason where we saw Kenny Golladay get paid a ton of money to go to the Giants and do nothing based on injury and that the Giants in general are just really bad.
Well, really the Golladay example is a good one, though, because he was injured the season before, too. Like, you know, people often say, well, this guy's a free agent. He's going to show out and then get a fat contract in free agency. We talk about that a lot in basketball. We talk about that a lot certainly in the NFL, certainly in the NHL as well. Like, what is Nazem Kadri's contract going to look like next year? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but he's probably going to get a blank check from whoever wants to pay him based on how he's playing this year in Colorado. But, I mean, those kind of conversations we have all the time. But Kenny Golladay, did he play at all in 2020? Or he played
barely.
Like one game? Or yeah, it was like it was not a lot. He was not on the field a lot, and he still got paid like a number one wide receiver. And hey, you know what? More power to him. I'm glad he did.
But if
he got paid like that, you're right. Like, what is Mike Williams going to get paid like? What is Odell Beckham Jr. going to get paid like, right? He had a pretty fantastic year when he went to L.A. What is Chris Godwin going to get paid like? He tore his ACL, but we all know Godwin is extremely talented. These are all guys who have been injured, and we have a decent pedigree of success for most of these guys, and they could easily get paid what Golladay get paid. So if that's the case, then yeah, maybe it just might be easier for teams to spend, like you said, Andy, a second-round draft pick, third-round draft pick, maybe even later. I mean, the sheer amount of wide receivers in this draft and just the sheer amount of picks available in general in the NFL draft going down to 7 rounds, I mean, you can find wide receiver talent pretty much in every round, I would think.
Well, and here's – I was thinking about this watching the Combine and making my notes here, Show. Was you see guys – and listen, you know I love my Ohio State and Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave. Whew. Super, super talented. But if I'm looking at guys, and they're going to be first-round picks and should be, but they're 6 feet, both under 190 pounds. Super fast, great athletes, don't get me wrong. But if I'm a team And I'm looking. It depends on need. If you're like, hey, I need a top wide receiver, and if I get him, I'm off to the Super Bowl. Then cool, go for it. But I want to look at, if I'm looking at to take a wide receiver high, I would rather look for those more specially built athletes, even if they're a bit more raw, and take advantage of those. I can find 6 feet receivers who are fast every year, all the time, and in free agency. Again, I think Wilson and Olave are a step above the normal. I think they're amazing. But I can find those types. What I can't find every day is a guy like London Drake, former college basketball player, who is 6'5", wins all the jump balls, is physical. He has had some drop issues. He looked good at the combine, but did have some drop issues, and that's the concern. If you're a receiver, you got to catch the damn ball. But you know what I mean, Joe? Like, if I'm looking at him, or Treylon Burks, who's just under 6'3", but 225, and can just inhale every pass that's near him, I would rather those type of elite special traits with size against cornerbacks that are usually, what, 5'10", 5'11"? I don't care how good your vertical is. If London Drake is 6'5", and you're a 5'10 receiver, he's winning that battle all the time, right? Like, I would rather focus on those type of athletes early, and then maybe wait, if I could, to get my 6 foot speedy receiver that, again, I can find in a lot of places.
Andy, is London Drake the best name at the draft?
Oh, you know what? Our friend Cynthia Freeland said from NFL Network, she wrote, and I just started laughing out loud because I'm like, oh my gosh, that's where it sounded familiar. She's like, didn't I play London Drake back in the old NCAA football video game days? She's like, I'm sure there was like every team as like one of those generic players had a London Drake.
It's true.
Oh my God, I think that's the familiar name. It's a great handle. And he's 6'5", show. Like, if as long as he can prove he can catch the ball, otherwise it doesn't matter. But if he can catch the ball, that guy, him and Treylon Burks are just looking like such pure day one talents that you can go. I love London. I think London Drake has all the possibilities if he can hold onto the ball.
You know what? I think I'm at the point where Ja'Marr Chase has scared me into never talking about drops again. Never. Like, never, ever again. Like, out of any of these college prospects, they're like, they had drops, some drop issues. Okay, well, you know what? You know people often say, don't hold your breath. I will hold my breath on that until I see London Drake at the NFL level, because there is a non-zero chance that what will end up happening is he just comes in and he never has a drop again, or like has very few drops in the NFL, because that's just how life is sometimes.
Ja'Marr Chase, where it's like, oh, he didn't know that the ball didn't have a stripe or something.
That's so funny.
Remember that? Like, what are you talking about? Just like, oh, see, we should have taken the lineman, which I think they still should have. But it worked out pretty good. You got to the Super Bowl. They're going to take lineman this year. I think Cincinnati's going to have a very boring draft, from the sense that it is going to be offensive and defensive line, and then you try to go win the division again.
I think, honestly, I forget what their general manager's name is, but if the Cincinnati general manager decided to just go to the draft and pre-fill out all his cards by just saying highest remaining offensive lineman, and then just handed the entire stack to Roger Goodell, that'd be fine. That'd be completely fine.
Go on vacation.
And then like Goodell just looks and says, all right, the next best available tackle is this guy, and he's now a Cincinnati Bengal. They just did that for the entire draft. I think that's, you know what, perfectly fine with me.
And that's it. And real quick, Jen, in the next segment, we'll go over best landing spots for free agent wide receivers and what the fantasy football impact would be from that. Saquon Barkley, the Giants open to fielding offers from Saquon Barkley, the former second overall pick. And show, it just proves again how fast that running back life can flip upside down, right?
Yeah.
And Barkley's just... We know, and we've been saying, we've been saying for too long now, last 2 years, if he can stay healthy. If you keep saying if, there's problems. The ifs with Saquon Barkley has never been the talent. The ifs have been, can he stay on the field? And he just can't. Could he come back and play 15, 16, 17 games this year and ball out? I suppose so, but I'm going to err, especially on the fantasy football side, I will err on not touching Saquon Barkley in any league and be and risk being proven wrong. Like, oh boy, someone took him in the second, third round, and boy, what a value. I'll chance that rather than have Saquon Barkley on my roster at this point in time.
I think, you know what, that's totally fair, and I don't blame you or anyone else who feels that way. I think I'm willing to give it one more year. I'm willing to give it one more shot, and if at this point he doesn't, it's fool's gold again, then I'll be on that same train with you next year. Because it's not his fault. It's not like there was never any reports of him like showing up to like the off season or training camp or mini camps or what have you, like out of shape or
no.
There's never been any reports of him being a bad teammate or doing anything like getting into trouble like off the field and stuff like that. Right? There's like literally his entire career. There's never been a bad word. No one's ever said boo about Saquon Barkley. It's just been the health stuff, like you said, like the injuries and so on. So because of that, I think I am willing to give it one more shot, because if he can stay healthy, and like you said, that is the big question, it's nothing, no other question, then I think he could be a boon, especially to a team that is seemingly going to reinvent themselves this year with a new general manager and a new head coach, and they're going to try and support Daniel Jones as much as possible, which I would imagine meaning running the ball as much as possible as well. So that's the only reason I'm willing to give it one more shot. But if after this, even with a new head coach and a new system in place, and he still doesn't produce, even if he does remain healthy, then yeah, I think it's time to hop off that Saquon train and move somewhere else. But again, that just kind of goes back to the point we were talking about before. Like, it's just when he was drafted, teams hadn't quite entirely come around to like the idea of not taking running backs super highly, right? Because Barkley went super high, Zeke went in the top four, I think it was, right? So later, like in a different draft, right? So it's just generally speaking, I think we're at the stage now where no matter how good your running back is, paying them like franchise changing money is probably never a good idea. You and I both like Nick Chubb, and he got a pretty nice payday, but for them to pay them any more than they paid him, I still think even for someone like Chubb would be maybe a mistake. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, it goes in phases, because the NFL was spooked at a taken running backs in the first round after the 2012 draft, where the Browns took Trent Richardson third overall.
Right.
He had a really good rookie year, almost 1,000 yards, and then faded into oblivion, unfortunately, and financial troubles. Good Lord. Oof, terrible. But then they're like, I don't know. And then they kind of stayed away from it for a couple years. And then you're right, they kind of pounced back in. And now it's looking again like, okay, with so many committees, where do you put the value on it? And even look at the San Francisco 49ers, right? You take a running back in the third round, and then Elijah Mitchell pops out and is just a freak show. And it's like, well, where did that guy come from? No one's drafting him over Trey Sermon? Like, it's wild. So it's, you have to figure the team, figure the place, figure the situation. And now I think, again, yeah, we're bringing that into the wide receiver conversation. So going to be really interesting. We'll talk about that with Russell Brown at the top of the hour. Some combine talk, some rookies, free agent wide receiver talks coming up after that. Also, your chance to win some Domino's pizza in our first installment of our Fantasy Wrestling Pick'em contest. So we tweeted out, on Twitter, which is where you tweet, of course, at The Fantasy Show, at AndyMC81, at SNSLE. We tweeted out the matches, and we'll send it to you via text as well, if you like, that you get to pick on in AEW Revolution, which goes later tonight. And if you get the most right, if there's a tie, you'll be put in a random draw, and you will win a big old pizza prize. So we'll get into that a little bit later. Before we break, show, I know we wanted to talk a little bit about the hockey side, and Vancouver Canucks over the Maple Leafs 6-4 last night, and those goaltending issues for the Leafs, show. Yeesh. Like, it's getting to a point now. Like, we're in March, okay? Like, how patient does Kyle Dubas have to be? And is it another defenseman you need? Is it more forward help? What do you do at goalie? Because you can't just go out typically and be like, hey, yeah, I'll take that number one goaltender for a long playoff run, please, in March. Doesn't happen.
Yeah. It's not Not looking good. He basically said in his post-game press conference yesterday, he basically said, I forget like the exact words, I'm paraphrasing, but he said something like, I will get it back, I promise, to the media, but really to the fans, right? And, I mean, yeah, I mean, after legitimately being in the Vezina conversation in the first, like, month of the year, it is, like, the complete opposite. It's, like, night and day, right? Our pal Nick Alberga made this stat last night. I saw this. He had said, after the fourth goal, he said, Jack Campbell has surrendered four or more goals in nine of his past 15 appearances. And then he gave up the fifth goal. Jack Campbell has surrendered five goals in seven of his past 15 appearances. So that is, as they say, hashtag not good. And no. I agree with you, Andy.
Too many.
I think they do have to, I don't know what it is. Like, I would imagine make some kind of trade for a goaltender, but they also need to make a trade for a defenseman. Do they need? I don't think they need another scoring punch. I think what we've seen from certainly Matthews and everyone else, yeah. I mean, Matthews is playing well enough, I think, to honestly, I know this is like a super homer take, but I think he's playing well enough to be in the Hart Trophy conversation because he's been that good this year, and he scored two goals again last night. And, you know, I got to say that the goal, I think the first goal of the night he scored on an errant pass from Brock Besser, falling away from the net, offhand, snapping that puck past Thatcher Demko. I gotta say that was cool. That was really cool.
Yeah.
But he alone can save this team. Right, as hard as he tries, he needs some backup on D and in the net.
If you're scoring two goals, we know the season he's had. The scoring punch is not the problem. The issue then becomes show. All right, you need an upgraded goaltender. You can't go on hope, especially for the Leafs this year and Kyle Dubas. Jobs are on the line, or they should be. Okay, this window is open right now, and we don't know how much longer it's going to be open for this Maple Leafs team with this core, with this group, with the salary cap up, like how this team is built. You have a commitment to overall mindset to defense, which was lacking. So where do you get that goaltender? You can't just go on hope with this team. You have another first-round exit show? I think heads got to roll. Like, for real. Like, you can't be like, oh, maybe next year again. No, we've had the maybe next year. That was last year. That was last year, and you're supposed to win it last year, and you got bounced by the Canadians in the first round. Unacceptable. So now you look, you wait, and you see this goaltending situation. What do you do? And I don't know if you can do anything if you're Kyle Dubas' show. Maybe I'm sure he's trying, but maybe at the end of the day, all he has, the only option he has to go for is hope. Because otherwise, what? You are hoping, again, that you're getting some other goalie in who gets hot. Well, then you're just like, that's like us being like, yeah, you get this guy. Maybe this works. Okay, it's like taking a flyer on your fantasy team. Well, I hope this fourth string wide receiver catches a touchdown. Well, he probably won't. And that's what to say with the goaltending situation. You bring in a new guy. If he's not a true number one, I don't know what you'd have to give up for that with all the salary implications. If you just bring in some other, you know, timeshare goalie, what are you going to expect?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think with the Leafs, first on your thing about heads got a roll if they lose in the first round again. I think I've long said this. I think it depends on how they lose. If they do, it depends on how they do, right? Because I think If they get waxed by the Lightning or the Panthers let's be real, it's probably going to be one of those teams they have to play in the first round. It's they'd have to win the division to play any other team, essentially. So and it's definitely possible, but I feel like it's probably unlikely at this point. So let's say they finish second or third in the Atlantic, which is the most likely spot right now. And they play the Florida Panthers, the Tampa Bay Lightning, and they get like crushed, like it's a four-game defeat or a five-game defeat at the hand of the Panthers or the Lightning, then yes, I do think maybe you'll see a coaching change or maybe a general manager change, or if that doesn't happen, one of the core four players shipped out, right? That's one of those things will probably happen. If they lose a tight battle to one of those teams and in like six or seven games and like two of the games or three of the games are in overtime, and the puck, you know what I mean? Like, I think, and that's the way they lose. I think you largely see things unchanged next year, apart from, as has been the last couple of years, the peripheral pieces of you know, the vets and the, like, the guys who fill out the fourth line and the, you know, the third pairing on D and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, that's what I think will change. But yeah, I really do think in how, because the other half of it is the Florida Panthers and the Tampa Bay Lightning are very good, right? Like, if it's crazy to say that the Leafs could play one, like, maybe the eventual Stanley Cup champion in the first round of the playoffs, right? That's, like, I think just the problem with how the playoffs are structured. And I think people in other, I know, it's, again, this is a very Toronto take, but you look at the other divisions too, and other people would probably argue the same, that it just, you know, I feel like it would be better for the league if the better teams are in the playoffs deeper, right? But at the same time, yeah, I like, at the same time, the Leafs have to win and beat good teams eventually, right? So
yes,
I don't know. There's only so much longer you can make excuses for teams, and I mean, I want them to win. I do. I think they are very, very, very talented. But the inconsistency you see on a night to night basis, like last week, we were talking about the 10-7 Red Wings win, and it was some insanity score. And like, here we're talking about a 6-4 game. They lost to the Canucks, and they came back in that game. They were down 3-1. They went up 4-3, and they lost 6-4. Like, come on.
Yeah, it's the goaltending thing is it's crazy. Calgary rolling as well, won in overtime over the Avalanche. Yeah, if you look, and then we'll break. So for the Leafs, depends what this organization fancies itself. Do you fancy yourself a championship team? It, like, truly a championship caliber team internally? Do they? If you do, then you're going to have to beat great teams, right?
Yeah.
It's Florida and Tampa Bay. Oh, well, guess what? They're really good, and they're not scared of you. So you got to figure it out, right? Like, it's no excuse to say, oh, they're really good. Okay, well, do you think you're really good? Then figure it out. Go get it, you know? And we don't get paid millions of dollars to make those personnel decisions, so that's on Kyle Dubas. And if you cannot get it done, then too bad, and then you're gone, and that's it. And we try something else.
I will say real quick, Andy, you mentioned the. I don't disagree with you. I think something has got to give at some point. I wouldn't mind seeing the Leafs go out and get another goaltender, but maybe they have hitched their wagon at this point to Jack Campbell and Peter Mrazek. And if that's the case, then you just have to, like you said, hope that they are better in essentially 2 months, essentially, right? Whenever the playoffs start. I think it's at the end of April. So we still have a decent amount of hockey left, but still, that's where we're at now. But before we break, you mentioned the Flames winning again. I don't know if you saw the overtime winning goal by Johnny Gaudreau, but the pass, it was like I think it was Elias Lindholm who had the puck in their own end, like basically right by the Calgary net. He banked the puck off the boards around the defender, like on an angle, like a pool shot, bounced it off the boards to Johnny Gaudreau, who's just crossing the blue line at the other end. Makes a nifty little move, scores in overtime, they win. And I got to say, I watched that live, and I was like, man, that is thrilling. And then I thought to myself, I don't remember the last time. I mean, sure, the 10-7 Detroit game or whatever was exciting, but I don't remember the last time something like that happened in overtime in the Leafs. I don't know. It's such an up-and-down season, but that was admittedly a cool play from Lindholm to Gaudreau for the win.
So Calgary rolling, we'll see what the Leafs do, and as Vancouver comes back to win that one. All right, we're going to break. Top of the hour, Russell Brown, National Scout for Cover One and Cover One NFL Draft Podcast, to talk about these combine athletes, what it means for a fantasy football team, rookies. We're going to chat next about best landing spots for free agent wide receivers. And coming up, don't forget, get your picks in for AEW, our Revolution pay-per-view, from our friends at DropTheBelt.com, our pick'em contest for the matches. We'll tee up those matches for you, and you can find the list right now on Twitter at The Fantasy Show, at AndyMC81, and at SNSLE. The Fantasy Show will continue across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We're back. We're rolling on The Fantasy Show. Worldwide across the Sportsnet Radio Network and wherever you get your podcast, folks. Spotify, Apple, Google, wherever else. There's probably other places, I don't know. But you can get it there if you miss any of the show. Podcast, set it. Leave. Oh, show, we got to put, not this week, because we're already giving away pizza for our wrestling contest. Andy McNamara, that's right. Me, Show Ali. We got to do a bribe for love, buy the love for the 5-star ratings on the podcast.
Right.
Let's mental note that for next week, where if you leave a 5-star rating and a comment or like, wow, I can't decide who's more amazing, Andy or Show. The answer, they're both amazing. And then you get entered to win a lots of pizza.
I will say our pal Leslie from Scarborough, I will give them all the credit. They did do that.
Okay.
And if you go check on the podcast app, you will see a very glowing review. So there you go.
Really? From Leslie?
Yeah.
You know what? Leslie from Scarborough, if you're listening, I want to send you a pizza for that. I want to send you a pizza. Text in to Show, 590-590. And I think you know the number, so make sure it's not just someone's like, I'm Leslie, and then somebody else.
I do, yes.
A swerve.
Actually,
but Leslie,
you know what?
For that, you get pizza.
I already have Leslie's email, so we're good. Don't worry.
Oh, perfect. All right. Leslie, keep an eye on. We'll send you some pizza for that. We can, our love and pizza giveaways can and should be bought. Mm-hmm. I can be bought with compliments very easily. Shallow, insecure individual that I am, Show.
didn't get too many compliments, you know, over your career. So now we can buy them as many as we want.
Listen, if you believe in yourself, you don't need compliments, baby. That's it. Don't get me on a heel promo right now, Show. That's for later on our age of
later,
pick 'em for our buddies at dropthebelt.com, which is a super cool site, folks. You got to check it out if you're a wrestling fan. We're going to talk combine rookie prospects overall, who you should be keeping an eye on the fantasy football side, with Russell Brown at the top of the hour, our good buddy there. But the current slate, Show, of wide receivers and free agent landing spots. And again, I'll go back to, we saw the biggest bust that jumps to mind was Kenny Golladay last year. What should the top dollar type of receivers go for, and where should they line up? So if we look at, let's start sort of at the top, go to spottrack.com. I'm sure you guys know about it, but if you don't, man, just the information is phenomenal. Doesn't it seem like, Show, that Davante Adams is older than 25? Like, he's just like been, it seems like he's been around forever. He's 29. He signed when he's 25, but even at 29, right, it seems like he's been around for so long. And he's at that stage where, man, with him and Aaron Rodgers, we don't have to go up fantasy wise. My goodness, just unbelievable. It seems like they're tied at the hip, because I don't know. I'm sure if he goes somewhere else, he'll be great. But if he doesn't go to, or he doesn't stay with the Packers one more year with Aaron Rodgers, I'm not sure exactly what you do with him. You could franchise tag him. The franchise tag this year, it's actually not bad. It's $19.127 million, which would still give him a raise. He made $12.25 mil this year, Davante Adams. You could franchise tag him for 1 year. Bring back Aaron Rodgers, and then if you're the Packers, you just figure it out for 2023.
Yeah, I think I feel like the most likely landing spot for him is just re-signing with the Packers, especially or signing a 1-year deal or a very short-term deal, right, to play for the Packers in 2022, because doesn't it certainly feel like Aaron Rodgers is going to come back to the Packers now? Like, after all of the hoopla about where is he going to go, and he's going to demand a trade, and this and that. It was his last year, the last dance, as all the Instagram posts looked like, and whatever, right? If Aaron Rodgers stays in Green Bay, I feel like there's a 0% chance that Davante Adams plays anywhere else, right?
No.
Certainly, if Aaron Rodgers leaves, then, I mean, even if Rodgers leaves, like you said, I think he probably still gets franchise tagged. So I think Adams is going to be on the Packers again this year. Although I didn't realize this. I'd forgotten, I guess. It's been so long. But Derek Carr, he had played with Derek Carr in college. Like, they were college teammates. Seeing that the Raiders now having Josh McDaniels there, it wouldn't be surprising, but it wouldn't be all that surprising to see Davante Adams leave and sign with the Raiders to be, you know, Derek Carr's newest toy.
Interesting. That would be, I still think, just based on the quarterback talent, and I love Derek Carr, and he was able to pop up some points. I think he's underrated in that regard. But I think if that scenario happened, he goes to the Raiders, you have to tick down Davante Adams.
Because
he's not playing with Aaron Rodgers. Right? Like, you're not. So you got to match up those quarterbacks. If he stays, Davante Adams, WR1, and you set it, forget it, and you kind of roll from there. You brought up this name earlier, Show. Chris Godwin. Now, Chris Godwin had obviously success with Tom Brady, had that ACL injury, but also was looking good before. Like, he's one of those guys where I look at him and I'm thinking, all right, he's 26, ACL. Now, if you come off the first ACL, shouldn't be a problem. If you're on your second one, same knee like OBJ, different story. But it looks like to me, like, okay, he's healthy. Maybe it's a slow comeback. And at some point this year he goes. But as a third round pick, that's a guy who I want on my team, Joe, but I don't want to pay top dollar for. You know what I mean? Like, he seems like one of those guys, like, I don't want to pay top dollar for right now.
Chris Godwin.
Yeah, for Chris Godwin.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
That's somebody, just... again, where I'm just feeling like, if I'm looking at Chris Godwin, and he's one of those guys, again, now 6'1", 209, bigger body than the likes coming out of the draft of a Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave. But do I want to pay $15 million for a guy coming off of ACL surgery who is, the size is good. I think it's underrated. But if I'm Tampa Bay, do I maybe go get somebody who's in that? And there's a lot of them this year. A 6 foot something, smaller, speedy guy who I can pop in the outside. I think I can find that for cheaper. That's my whole point going back. Do I need to pay Chris Godwin that type of money coming off of an ACL?
I do agree that the ACL injury does make it tricky to project, like, where he would go and how much of a risk do you want to take on that. But at the same time, I don't know. I just feel like Chris Godwin has enough of a pedigree and enough of a track record. And I know he has had injuries before, but nothing as bad as the ACL until now. And we know that ACL tears are not exactly like the death knell for a career they were, like, you know, 15 to 20 years ago, right? So with that being the case, I feel like his track record is good enough that, like, there's a line somewhere where you have the conversation of, you know, do you want to take a chance on an unproven but definitely very talented college receiver who's probably a little raw, right? And obviously we know, especially in recent history, Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson specifically, that guys can come in and succeed right away. So I'm not saying that's not going to happen if the Bucs decide to go away from Godwin. But it just I feel like Godwin is still pretty young. He's 26. He is a Super Bowl champion. He was a big part of that Super Bowl run and has been an integral part, even before Tom Brady, has been an integral part of that Tampa Bay offense. So I feel like if he goes to a team that needs a wide receiver, because, you know, it's sure, he may not be 100% right away, but if he gets signed to, like, a long-term deal, I would be completely fine with that, especially to a team, maybe to a younger quarterback team, right? Like, maybe to... Again, I brought up the Jaguars last week, maybe to the Jags. I could see him playing very well with Trevor Lawrence, sure, right? I could see him playing very well in Chicago with Justin Fields. I could see him playing
him
very
Philly.
Well in Miami with Tua.
Yeah, Tua. The team that jumped to mind to me was the Eagles.
Ooh, okay.
Because seems like they... Now, you spent the first-round capital on Devonta Smith Jr. last year, and he certainly flashed up and down for, but I think overall, at least the durability issues for year one with that slender frame we talk so much about, he seemed to curb those. Could those pop up? Sure. But that's a spot, again, where you've been looking for that wide receiver help. You've really been looking for that. Could somebody, a veteran like a Chris Godwin, pop in? Then you have Dallas Goedert. Then you have Smith. You have that committee mess in the backfield. You have Jalen Hurts who can move. That's a sure-handed guy that you can get and you can stretch the field with. I think the Philadelphia Eagles, that might be a nice spot too.
You know where else, Andy, I would honestly, no joke, I would love to see Godwin sign are the Browns. I think, like, honestly, I think Godwin's, like, he may not be available for week one. I'm not actually sure how far along he is in the ACL stuff, but it happened, I feel like, long enough ago that by September he should probably be good to go, right?
Right.
So if that's the case, then let's just assume he is available for week one. Chris Godwin, I honestly think would be fantastic on the Browns, because you know Baker Mayfield is going to just throw him the ball as much as humanly possible. Because, hey, if Jameis Winston can do it when he was the quarterback of the Bucs before Brady, then certainly Baker Mayfield can do it better, I would imagine. And
right,
you know, if you have Nick Chubb and these guys opening up the field on the run game, then I think Godwin would work very well. I don't know if Landry is on his way out or what. I've been hearing some different things about Landry, and you probably would know better than I. But if it's Godwin Landry, that's a pretty good one too, isn't it not?
It would be. I think Landry is on his way. He's owed like over $16 million. Show.
Oh, okay.
For come on, you know, I love Jarvis as much as the next guy, but a guy who's had consecutive season with 4 touchdowns, I'm not paying you $16 million. You know, like I can get. I'll tell you examples in the draft where I think you can get a guy, David Bell out of Purdue. I was watching him 2 nights ago, and it jumped off the page to me. Jarvis Landry type. Smaller guy, but powerful burst. He runs angry, great hands in that gauntlet drill. Natural pass catcher. I can get David Bell. I'm not sure what round he'll go in. Probably 3rd round. For a whole lot cheaper than $16 million. So I could go there. Look, maybe the Browns do something like this. You go, let's say for fun, a David Bell. There's your new slot guy. Donovan Peoples-Jones, who I still think is going to be a stud and should
be picked
up. You love
that guy. You love him so much.
Oh, my gosh. I love DPJ. That dude. You get a healthy Baker, that guy, man, I'm telling you. You put him, maybe Godwin, to your point, on the outside. You mix in a rookie in. You got the running back. You still have a nice tight end core there, too. That's a good play. I like that Chris Godwin look. And we talk about big body guys. Where does Mike Williams fall off to you? For the Chargers, 27. Show, it seems like every single year we're like, this is the Mike Williams year. And it never happened until the first half of this season. And then again, he started to fade away. Seems like such a big-bodied guy with all the talent. But for whatever reason, hasn't been able to consistently put it together over his career.
You know, I know we just talked about the Raiders and how they're a new-look team and Ziegler and McDaniels and so on. But still, like, the Raiders do have a certain... like reputation for going out and getting receivers. Doesn't Mike Williams just scream Raider to you? To me, he does.
Overspend.
I don't know. I can't quite explain it, but I really do think he does. I think the most likely scenario is that he just re-signs in Los Angeles and just continues playing with Justin Herbert, because he did have a decent rapport with Herbert over the course of the season, even though it fell off. He still was a relatively reliable target for 76 receptions, a little over 1,000 yards or 1,100 yards.
Over 1,100.
It's not bad. I know most of that came in the first half, but still, I think he did help Justin Herbert on his way to becoming one of the better fantasy quarterbacks, like, period, right? So I think if you want to have more success for your young quarterback, you want to keep as much continuity around him as possible, right? So that's why I think he probably will stay with the Chargers. But boy, if there was ever a team that's going to just maybe like overpay for someone like Mike Williams, I could see it being the Raiders. Although again, new management and so on, maybe that won't happen now. But historically, I feel like Mike Williams would be a Raiders pick.
It's funny you say that, and I'm with you. I don't know why, but it just seems like they would pay him too much money.
Yeah,
and then he'd be fine. He'd get you 800 receiving yards.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he'd be like, and 5 touchdowns. And he'd be like, it's not worth the money. But I wonder, too, to that point, saying with the Chargers, you still have Keenan Allen, who's getting up there. He's 29 years old. Okay? He's 9 years in the league. He is signed through 2024, though, at big money. Like, this year, it's $16.5 million, plus a signing bonus. Was it the... Oh, my gosh. Oh, $19 million. He's owed. 2023, $15.5 million. Plus signing, and then 18 plus in 2024. As we know, show with the NFL, he's probably not seeing all that money at some point. He's probably not seeing all that cash at 29 years old. So maybe that to the Chargers, if you want continuity, you're like, okay, maybe we got a year with Keenan Allen left. He's starting to break down a little bit. So we keep Mike Williams, draft a young guy. So that makes a lot of sense from their standpoint, if the price is right, to be able to keep Williams there, with keeping in mind that you have a $16 to $20 million receiver for the next 3 years on your books in Keenan Allen.
I do like Keenan Allen, though, I will say. Like, I think Keenan
Me too.
Allen,
yeah.
Like, he has been like, since they made the switch to Justin Herbert, I feel like Keenan Allen has been like he's been good enough that I feel I would feel comfortable investing maybe a relatively high draft pick into him next season, like in August or September, whenever we do our draft. I feel like I'd be okay picking Keenan Allen in, like, I don't know, maybe it's like the end of the second round, beginning of the third round, if I had to guess right now. Probably no higher than that, but given how many other, like, stupid talented people there were this year. But Keenan Allen has been so productive. It's maybe he gets a boost in PPR specifically, but he has been so talented, specifically with Justin Herbert. I want him on my team next year. I do.
I want him. I don't want to reach for him, but I wouldn't mind if he's on it. I'm still a little nervous with the injuries and the age a bit. But I see your point absolutely. You know who I think is going to be show. All the talk about Amari Cooper, all the talk about the things in Dallas. I think the forgotten man is Michael Gallup. And if he re-ups with the Cowboys, here's what I think will happen. Cooper will part ways with Dallas. Gallup stays. And we saw when Gallup gets the chance to up himself to a WR2, that dude produces. And he can be had at a value if he stays with the Cowboys. And let's say Dallas goes and drafts a second or third round wide receiver to keep that offense humming, because they don't have that many holes to fill, really. You know, keep shoring up that defense a bit. And then you go back. You get... Michael Gallup at a relative steal. Like, he was making show under $1 million the past 3 years. Last year was the first time he got over $1 million in salary. So, and he's still that secondary type. So you probably get him, depending on what the market shows, maybe between $3 and $5 million for a guy who knows the system, who can keep going, who's 26, as that 2 to CeeDee Lamb, and you get a rookie coming up. I want Michael Gallup on my fantasy team next year. If that scenario plays out in that way, because I think he's going to be forgotten about, and he can put up WR2 numbers for you.
Yeah, I gotta say, I felt bad for the guy. He missed the first like 6 or 7 games because he had some calf injury or some leg injury of some kind, and then he came in. He was fine because Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb were taking most of the targets. He popped like he usually does when other guys miss time, and then he tore his ACL in like the last game of the season. I think it was it was the second last game because of the extra game this year. So in week 17, he tore his ACL, which that just sucks, right? Like, I felt so bad for the guy because, like you said, he was becoming a free agent and going to make a significant payday, which has probably been reduced a little bit by the injury. But I do agree with you. If he's again, like for a lot of these guys, staying put is probably the best option but specifically staying put in Dallas is probably a better option fantasy wise for him because of how he will be a part of that offense, especially because of the news that came out of the combine that seems to suggest that Amari Cooper is on his way out, which seems to also be money related. I think Amari Cooper is going to make like up $20 million or something like that this year, so they can cut him and save like a whole ton of cash. So maybe that some of that cash goes towards Michael Gallup, and like you said, they draft someone else. I am concerned if Amari Cooper leaves. We just don't have the data that suggests what the red zone usage of all of these guys will look like without Amari Cooper, because I think it was something like Dalton Schultz was the guy in the red zone for Dak, and then it was Cooper, right? And so if you're taking all of those Cooper red zone targets away and all of the other targets as well, are they all going to go to Michael Gallup? How much more is going to go to CeeDee Lamb? How much more is going to go to Schultz or even to, I don't know, you could say Blake Jarwin or to this mysterious second or third round wide receiver we're thinking they're going to take? So the Dallas offense is always going to be fantasy relevant as long as Dak Prescott is playing there. And he's going to be there for a long time, as we know. But that kind of stuff fascinates me. But yeah, I agree. If Gallup stays, I think, you know, you could probably get him at a little bit of a discount, although I wouldn't be surprised if over the course of the summer he's one of those names where his names like fly up draft charts and it becomes like a little unsustainable.
And you can say that you heard it here first. Right, go get yourself some Michael Gallup. That's why you listen to the fantasy show. You also listen for some terrific guests, and that's who we have next after the break. Russell Brown, national scout for Cover One and host of the Cover One NFL Draft podcast. Also show, I just messaged with him. He's a wrestling fan. He's an AEW fan. He's going to give us his Revolution pay-per-view picks for our pizza contest as well coming up. But also, we talked about the free agents. Who are the rookies we should be keeping an eye on when it comes to fantasy football coming out of the combine. We'll talk to Russell Brown about that next when the fantasy show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of the Fantasy Show kicks off right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show, and at those Twitter addresses as well is where you can find our AEW Revolution pay-per-view pick'em contest courtesy of our friends at DropTheBelt.com. We'll have those picks up, and if you get the most right, you'll be entered to win a big pizza prize. That'll come in the next segment. So we'll get some of those picks. You can text them in for the pay-per-view. We'll read those out, 590, 590, or just reply to the tweet also. But we have a... Now, it turns out he is a wrestling fan, but also we're going to talk a lot of football and which of these prospects at the combine coming out might make a big impact for your fantasy football team. Our good friend Russell Brown, national scout for Cover One and Cover One NFL Draft Podcast, on the line. Russ, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, fellas. How are you guys?
We are doing good, sir. So, listen, before we get to the combine, I got my notes. I'm ready. I'm frothing at the mouth seeing these guys. They're sprinting. They're juking. They're gauntlet. All that good stuff. Let's get your wrestling picks here, okay? Because it's a NFL off season. We're doing a little fantasy wrestling. So we have these matches for you for tonight's AEW Revolution pay-per-view. I'm going to list them out and we'll get your quick picks here, okay? We'll do Chris Jericho versus Eddie Kingston, Bryan Danielson versus Jon Moxley, CM Punk versus MJF in the dog collar match, tag titles, Jurassic Express, who are the champs, versus Red Dragon versus Young Bucks in the world title, Adam Hangman Page versus Adam Cole Bebe for the world title. Does any match sort of stand out to you? Do you have some good feelings, some gut feelings on how this is going to play out?
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching wrestling for pretty much 30 years, so I think I can kind of see how it plays out in my head. And, you know, AEW does things a little bit differently than the other one. But, yeah, I mean, I think Chris Jericho wins. He's got himself back in shape. Eddie Kingston just doesn't win big pay-per-view matches. I'll say Jon Moxley wins. He's back. I just don't see him losing after, you know, this is kind of his big match back since, you know, he went away for a while. I could obviously see that being a draw. I'll take CM Punk. I think this is the spot where MJF and Wardlow kind of start hashing it out because that's been pretty evident for weeks. And the tag title one I struggle with. I could see any of these teams winning, but this might be the safe way for Jurassic Express to retain the belts. And then lastly, for the world title, as much as I would love to see Adam Cole win, I think he could potentially lose to Adam Hangman Page and set something up for the future for another match.
Right, and you have that Bullet Club linkage going back a few years, and I just feel we're going to have some sort of tie-in between that Red Dragon, Young Bucks in that tag title match that spills over maybe to the world title situation. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah, that's very possible. Yeah.
Going to be interesting. All right. Well, you know what, Russ? We'll have to have you on another time to talk more wrestling. We can do a whole show on that, which maybe we will in the future. But let's get to the football here, man. So the combine. Now, I pick an offensive and defensive. I call it my combine crush each year. Someone who just jumps off and like, wow, absolutely love these guys. When you're looking through these first few days of the combine compared to the notes that you've taken through the college game, give me an offensive player that really leapt off the page to you who maybe upped their stock a lot or somebody who you thought was really good and just like, oh, yeah, you know, seeing those combine, that just solidified it for me.
Yeah, I mean, that person would be Christian Watson out of North Dakota State, kind of solidified it for me. I mean, I saw him down at the Senior Bowl. He did a really good job just with, like, lower body flexibility, some pretty good releases off the line of scrimmage and able to kind of turn defenders inside and out. But he's got great length for the position at 6'4", 208. And everybody just thought maybe he was going to be a vertical threat down the field, maybe a little bit able to stretch the field at times. But it feels like this guy can do it all at this rate and time. I mean, again, you talk 6'4", 208, 38.5-inch vertical jump, a broad jump of 136 inches, which is insane. It was like 11.4. And then a 40-yard dash at 4.36. To do that at that size is incredible to me. It goes to show how explosive he is as a player. And I think it just goes to show that this guy was probably a top 50 pick after the Senior Bowl. I think he solidified it here. There's a chance we see him at, you know, maybe pick 32 to Detroit because of just the need at wide receiver potentially. Maybe a team like the Packers might take him at the back end there in the first round, but plenty of teams in the second round will take him early. And you look at him, and I know a lot of people that love him and his skill set, and he's a great interview. So when you just put it all together with the combine, it's hard to say this guy didn't do enough for his stock. I think he did an incredible job this past week.
So, Russell, when we look at like the kind of big picture stuff here for the combine, I've said this before, but I feel like the combine, it's not really for the guys who are already going in the first round, right? Like this, the combine really only benefits, I feel like, guys who go in the mid to later rounds because they can push their draft stock up with a high 40 time or a great cone drill or, you know, the high jump or whatever, right? Like whatever, you know, drill you want to point at. But for guys who are already going to go in the top 20 to 25 picks first round, let's say, generally speaking, does it really change all that much at the end of the day?
No, it doesn't. I mean, there's times where I think you might take him from a top 10 pick to more so, like you just said, maybe of a top 20, top 25 pick. And what that means is basically he doesn't necessarily become that top 10 lock that we maybe expected or anything like that. He more so becomes maybe closer to pick 15 or pick 20, somewhere in that range. It seems more likely for a player. But, you know, you bring up a good point. You look at a player like Jordan Davis. He was probably going in the first round regardless, but you see him come in at 6'6", 341, and run a 4.78 40, which just doesn't seem human. And you see the way that he moves, and it's like, imagine this guy chasing down a quarterback or a running back, because he shows good pursuit on film and things like that. So I think he locked himself up in potentially the top 10, because there's teams in there that are just going to be like, how do we not take a guy like this because of the mismatches that he presents and provides for our defense? But there's definitely, you know, kind of case-by-case basis of where you get, you know, potentially a player that maybe has a really good 40 time but a really bad broad jump, but then he also does really bad within the three cone drill. So then you start hesitating, like, well, sure, he might run well in a straight line, but his hips are not really fluid. He's super stiff in other areas of the field. And you watch him on the field doing some drills, and you're like, he's not starting properly, really slow in that regard. So it all kind of ties in, but I don't think there's anything crazy within this group where it was like make or break a player in the first round. I think the first round guys are pretty much solidified, and there's going to be a couple of guys that we didn't expect in the first round that obviously do it every year.
Well, on Jordan Davis, then, I just got to have to ask. I mean, I had mentioned this to Andy before as well, but I can't help but think the way people talked about what Jordan Davis did, and like you said, it did not seem real that he could run a 4.78 40. That's like for at his size and weight and so on. That is absolutely crazy. But I almost feel like people are talking about him, like in terms of his performance at the combine, in the same way they once talked about Calvin Johnson or Adrian Peterson, and those guys had ridiculous combines because they're freaks of nature. But it certainly feels like maybe because of we live in the age of social media, like you can see all of those things right away on Twitter and Instagram and so on. Whereas you kind of had to wait, I think, a little bit for Megatron and AP, right? And now you can see it right away. So I wonder if that does contribute to this a little bit, but I feel like Jordan Davis maybe does belong in that conversation because he's a defensive tackle doing things at the combine, at least, that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, it's definitely, I think, a mixture of both there with what you said. You know, you got social media that plays a big part in just about everything. You see, you know, some of these 40 times they come out, you know, for example, Chris Olave on Thursday night runs a 4.26 40 on live on YouTube. My jaw hits the ground because I wasn't expecting that. Then I wake up the next day and he runs an official 4.39. So it's like, you know, some of the technology at the combine is a little bit off. But then also, I think, that is there part of that to, you know, create that social media buzz so everybody keeps tuning into the combine and things like that? It's hard to say. There's a lot of conspiracy theories out there. But, yeah, social media plays a big part. But, yeah, with Jordan Davis, I mean, he's just a freak of nature. And, you know, where this matches up with other defensive tackles, it's, you know, it's a rarity to see a player of his size to do what he does. So we'll see, obviously, in a couple of weeks how it plays out, where he goes. But, yeah, it's been exciting to watch some of these big guys run around.
In conversation with Russell Brown, a national scout for Cover One, on Twitter at RussNFLDraft. Now, Russell, let's go back to the wide receivers here. a guy who, and I'm totally with you, Christian Watson, loved him, the Senior Bowl, all the measurables, catch the ball, the physical traits are phenomenal. Another guy, more raw, who just, and this is where I talk about the combine crush, how can I not look at Drake London out of USC, 6'5", 210, your former basketball player, just jump ball. The guy wins every jump ball. He has those freak physical traits where he's fast, strong, and tough. The only bit of a question was in college, had some drops. Where do you rank Drake London? And you take that just that look, that big body. Like, imagine him up against a 5'10 corner. Like, stop it. It's ridiculous. Like, yeah, right. where do you put him compared to these other wideouts?
Yeah, he's my top wide receiver. He's somebody that I could see being a top 10 pick. I really do. I mean, you look at a team like the Jets, you know, potentially Carolina or Atlanta, both those teams could potentially grab a wide receiver. And if they do, it wouldn't surprise me if they go with a guy that potentially could turn into similar to a Mike Williams or a Mike Evans type of receiver at the next level. And those guys have a need. They have an impact in the NFL. We see it all the time. You mentioned, you know, drops were a little bit of a concern for London. He had a career high of 8 drops in 2021. But, yeah, every 50-50 ball thrown his way, there's a pretty good chance of him coming down with it. He just is so clean with climbing the ladder and high-pointing the football. He's got, as you mentioned, great size and length of position. He's actually got, I think, a much better athletic profile for a player of his size with that basketball background. So I think that all sets him up for success deep down the field in different areas and different situations down the field. But what really separates him, I thought, was how well he worked back to the quarterback during scramble drills. I mean, he played with average quarterbacks at best at USC. But he did such a good job running his route, seeing they were in trouble, turning back and coming back to them and getting the football. And you just see guys that are getting, you know, targeted 15, 16 times in a game like Drake London is. And it's that doesn't happen for every player across college football. There's a reason for that. They knew he was a big impact player and they trusted his ability. And I think he's a top 10 worthy player. It wouldn't surprise me if he wasn't the first receiver off the board, because I think there's 6 receivers in this first round that all could go, and I think they could go in any order. But yeah, Drake London, love his skill set. Like I mentioned, former basketball player, averaged 29.2 and 12 rebounds per game as a senior in high school, played college basketball for USC. Just so much to love with him, athletic player. Absolutely love him.
Russell, did any of the quarterbacks, any of their performances do anything to change your minds about them, or were they largely performances that confirmed what you thought?
Yeah, I mean, it pretty much confirmed what I thought. I mean, I expected Kenny Pickett to kind of run the way he did. I expected him to be pretty consistent with just about every passing drill that there was, which he was. I did not expect Desmond Ridder to run a 4.52. I'll be honest there, but I do know that he's very mobile. I know, you know, you watch Cincinnati play, and he's got a ton of zone read opportunities to run the football or give it to the running back and things like that. And he does a really good job operating that Cincinnati offense. So I think maybe he solidified himself more into the first round conversation, not saying he's a lock to go there, but it felt like at times he was a second round pick at best. But I think there's a chance he goes in the first round for some of these teams that might not be able to grab that bridge quarterback here in free agency in a couple weeks. But then obviously just Malik Willis, you know, he didn't do a 40-yard dash or anything like that, but to see what he was able to do with the football in his hand and just make some of those deep ball passes, and then just seeing what he was doing outside of the facility helping the homeless guy. I mean, he's had such a great pre-draft process. It would not surprise me by any means if he ended up going as potentially as high as 2 to Detroit, which would be, you know, surprising. It's very possible, though. Anything's possible. But I think the ideal landing spot is either 6 at Carolina or potentially 9 at Denver for him. It just seems like he's a top 10 pick at this point because of everything that he's done, and everything I've heard up to this point has been, you know, basically solidified that he's going top 10, for sure top 15.
And let's swing back to Desmond Ridder, because that's at the Senior Bowl. He's the one that really jumped out to me, Russell, and I wanted to see how we did at the combine. And you're right. Yeah, that 4.5 second 40 was just like, oh, okay. You got my attention now. 10-inch hands, so much hand talk, right? Kenny Pickett makes it look like sounds like he has toddler hands. How they're describing him, you know, depends how that works out. But what stood out from reading up about him and hearing the commentary, leader, mature. It still needs some refinement with him, but it just seems like he's getting a Marcus Mariota comparison with that sort of athleticism, third most all-time wins in college football history, which is something. He just seems to have all the tools. Like, I would love him to go to a place where he can sit and not be rushed in. It might be a bit too much, like, as far as, like, a Russian type. But, yeah, like, he really stood out to me as being somebody that could go. Now, compare him with somebody like, let's say, one of the other guys who have been highly touted, like a Sam Howell. Sam Howell just, like, I like him to a degree here, Russell, but he just, I don't know, when I come away, I just see average. Like, I just feel average when I look at Sam Howell.
Yeah, the thing with Sam Howell is that I think when you look back at what he did in the 2020 season, I mean, he had four players on that offense that got drafted in the 2021 NFL draft. Then he kind of regresses because he loses the talent and the chemistry around him for the 2021 season. And I think that's what hurts Sam Howell a little bit. But he's a tough runner. He's got the desired mobility that you need to create plays on your feet. And I think from an arm talent perspective, he's got one of the more talented arms in the draft. I mean, with what he's able to do from all three areas of the field, but he's able to throw the ball deep down the field with ease. He does take those aggressive shots a little bit too much. But I think the biggest thing with Sam Howell by far is that he plays with far too much hesitation. He just, it looks like he's always second guessing himself. And if that's the case, I mean, you got to know that when you get to the NFL, you can't hesitate. You can't think twice about what you're trying to do. And I think that's what makes the difference between him and some of the other quarterbacks. With Desmond Ridder, there isn't that hesitation. He's making the throws and he's going through his reads and he's trusting his ability. And he makes some good throws away, you know, just kind of getting it out of his hand and off to the sideline and living for another day. And I think that's what separates him a little bit from some of these QBs as well. But yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw two QBs in the first round. It wouldn't surprise me if we saw four or five quarterbacks in the first round. It's just the way it kind of goes at times, but it's more so, you know, does Pittsburgh take one? Does the Saints take one? Who's going to take one? That's the biggest question mark. And that's going to be the answer that we are waiting for.
I got one more quarterback to throw at you here, and he played against weaker competition in college. But Russell, I just can't get Cole Kelly out of my head. I'm falling more in love with the guy. 6'7", but what stands out? Now we've seen big quarterbacks before, who have that long. You know, Mike Glennon comes to mind, who have that long, awful wind up that you're just like, that dude's getting sacked or picked off. You can just tell. For Mike Glennon, not Cole Kelly. It's a compact, shorter windup. The release, I like the footwork. I think the deep ball looks good. The intermediate, the placement, leading receivers. The arm is powerful. He can run. You know, he has what was it? 38 rushing touchdowns in college. Like I don't know. I'm not sure where he gets drafted. But what are your thoughts on Cole Kelly?
I haven't watched him enough in depth to be like, yeah, I feel confident on this potential grade or really where he ends up going. I have heard, you know, a little bit, as you mentioned, the rushing touchdowns. There's people that are really intrigued with his mobility, and they do wonder ultimately, you know, what can he do at the next level? He is a bigger quarterback, as you mentioned, 6'7". Is he somebody that comes in, maybe plays that quarterback position, or does he end up becoming similar to like a, you know, we saw with Logan Thomas when he came in from Virginia Tech as a quarterback, converted to tight end? Is that potentially the route he goes down the line here? But he's an intriguing player for sure. Somebody that if I can get some tape on, you'll see it on the timeline on Twitter of me breaking down some of his tape. But I haven't gotten into his tape yet. Just simply because I've spent so much time with some of these other quarterbacks in the group, like, you know, Bailey Zappe and Carson Strong and stuff.
Russell, I do want to ask, we talked a little bit about Jordan Davis, and I want to ask you about one of his teammates, Trayvon Walker. And I feel like Walker, I've seen this take on both sides, that he'll come in right away to the NFL and dominate. And then on the other side, that he will take some time to be acclimated to the NFL, and he's a bit more of a project. I'm just curious, like, where do you fall on that, and what was his performance at the Combine in the sense that did it change your mind on him at all, or, again, another thing that was confirmed about him? I'm just curious where you fall on someone like Trayvon Walker, because I've seen so many different takes on him, basically going back to the national championship game.
Yeah, he was somebody that was on the outside looking into my first round. I could potentially see him going in the first round. But there was a lot of rumors coming into the combine that if he does what he's supposed to do, he could be a top 10, top 15 pick, potentially one of the third or fourth edge rushers off the board somewhere in the top 10. And it seems like it's very possible now. I mean, to run a 4.51, to have a 6.89 cone, three cone drill is very impressive, because you love to see the speed and the athletic ability, which you see on tape because he plays all over the place. But that's the issue, and I think that's where people struggle to find him, because what role does he play? I mean, there's times where he's playing off the edge. He's playing as a linebacker at times, kind of in the middle of the defense. He's playing down as a two-eye, playing in that defensive tackle position. There's so many different spots for him. I just instantly think of, like, Rashawn Gary. I think the possibility of him being, you know, a top 15 pick, similar to how Rashawn was going to Green Bay. I think it was at 12. You look at Walker, kind of similar projection. He might take a year to maybe get acclimated to the NFL to kind of figure out, how does he play with speed to power? How does he do with his overall, you know, plan of attack? Can he develop one? And if he does, how far does that go and take him? And ultimately, you know, what's the position that he's going to play? Because you'll see him dropping into coverage. You'll see him rushing the passer. He's going to have a little bit more of that defined role, I think, in the NFL to find the success. But once he does, I think it's going to really go off for him. And maybe that team is maybe the Jets at 10 or something like that, just simply because with the Jets, Robert Saleh, great defensive coach, maybe a great just fit there ultimately. But he's an interesting one. And, I mean, I, at this point, Walker, I could see for sure being a first-round pick.
Last one for you here, Russell. The tight end group when it comes to fantasy football. Oh, boy. Well, like, it's a spot, man. If you miss, and even we saw Travis Kelce up and down this year. You miss on the top couple, you're chasing your tail the whole year. We know that. So that's why when we look at the draft each year, it's like, okay, who might be able to be that guy who can jump in? And we know traditionally the tight end is one of the harder spots for rookies to come in and make a fantasy football, an offensive contribution right away, because of, depending on the system, you have all the extra tasks, blocking and all that at the NFL level that maybe you didn't have in college or whatever the transition. A couple of tight ends that stood out to me, Jelani Woods at 6'7 from Virginia, just looks like an absolute freak in the best possible way. I love him. There's a couple. There's Greg Dulcich as well at 6'4, who looks good. Did a tight end jump out to you, not necessarily as someone who's going to be a great run block or whatever, but from an offensive side who could be an offensive factor maybe sooner than later at the pro level?
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite tight ends, he didn't do anything here at the combine, that would be Trey McBride from Colorado State. I think he's going to be really good at the next level. So if you just kind of keep notes on him, keep tabs where he ends up. But I'm with you on Greg Dulcich. I mean, we're talking a 6'4", 240-pound receiver or tight end that moves around like a receiver, and he does just so much with the ball in his hands. He's very fluid after the catch. I think he's somebody that in today's NFL, while averaging almost 18 yards per reception at UCLA, he could have similar production in a way for an NFL offense, for maybe, you know, a young quarterback somewhere, or even an established veteran somewhere in an offense where he can play and move around, play in the slot, play as an H-back, be that inline blocker at times. But ultimately, you know, when you're looking for a guy that might catch 50, 60 passes for your fantasy team, for your NFL team, I think Dulcich has got the upside to do so.
I like it. Okay, keep an eye on that, folks. Russell, never enough time, man. Thank you so much for jumping on this morning. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right. We'll see and talk to Russell soon. Russell Brown, National Scout for Cover One and host of the Cover One NFL Draft podcast. Always a great follow. Breaks down film on Twitter at Russ NFL Draft. Just a tremendous follow on there. So when we look at some of these players I mentioned from the tight end side, Greg Dulcich that Russ went over. But this show, I'm telling you, this Jelani Woods guy out of Virginia is somebody to watch. And it all depends, where does he go? Does he go to someone who can use him, who's not afraid to use him right away, like let's say a Kyle Pitts is more of a receiver? I don't want Jelani Woods at 6'7", show, 253, who ran a 4.61 second 40-yard dash. I don't want him blocking. I'm not interested in blocking. I'm interested in him catching me a lot of touchdowns, like he led the ACC in receiving and receiving yards and touchdowns this past year. I think this guy's going to be amazing with his hand placement, natural receiver. You can just see the ball catch and the gauntlet drills. If he goes to the right spot, I think this could be, especially for Dynasty League, somebody you want to keep an eye on.
I was trying to think when you were asking Russell that question about Woods. I was kind of trying to imagine who he would be, like, who a good NFL comparison would be for him. And I still can't really think of one because he's a tall guy. Like I don't want to say Gronk because Gronk is like is you know, he's
his
a freak
animal.
And yeah, he yeah. like that's its own conversation, right? But he's a similar size and he can clearly has good speed, like you said. He's a he like if he has good enough speed and is that big, then you wouldn't be shocked to see him not just be in the short routes, but you would see him on the deep routes or the intermediate to deep routes as well, right? So I get like I'm interested to see where he goes, but yeah, like fantasy wise, I'm not gonna hold my breath and say like, oh, he's gonna be a contributor right away, because you know how it is with rookie tight ends, right? Like Pitts, who was very good as a rookie, wasn't like. He wasn't blowing people away in for year number one. And that's just – I feel like that's just how it is for tight ends. Even Gronk caught some decent touchdowns when he was a tight when he was a rookie, rather. But, he was not a lot of yardage, right? I don't know. A lot of tight ends are just like that. But I do think that if he goes to the right situation, like we always say, he has right opportunities, then, hey, maybe he would be worth picking up at the end of your redraft league, right?
Yeah, there's so many. Oh, and the wide receiver class, show it's like, you pick your flavor. It's like Neapolitan ice cream. You get a bit of everything in it. Do you want a smaller, fast dude? Well, okay, I got some Calvin Austin the third for you, 4.3 second 40. Do you want a bit of a bigger slot guy? Well, that's where you go to the Ohio State. Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave. We talked about the big guys with Drake London and Christian Watson. You have another sort of tweener slot guy, like I talked about, Velus Jones Jr. out of Tennessee. Like, you have so many different options. So I wonder where these player goes. And I bet you we find some real value pickups in the second round. Like DK Metcalf, remember, fell to the second round because it was such a good wide receiver class. Oh yeah, show. And it's like, oh, he can't run routes. Well, okay, I think I'll take the guy who's 6'4", who's built like a Batman armor. And maybe teach him to run a skinny post. I think he'll try that.
You did say that it's like Neapolitan ice cream, though. I don't really like Neapolitan ice cream, Andy.
I'll put him in lots of flip. I like it. You scoop it up, you get a little bit of everything. That's what you get.
No, just decide on the one you want and then have it. That's how eating works. Just eat the one you want.
Damn it. What do you make real quick before we break? At the quarterback position, one guy we didn't talk about who I want to mention first, Jack Cohn out of Notre Dame. I do like him as well. At 6'3 1/4, 218. There was a tight ball. I look for these guys who push it and who can really place or lead. And the footwork, it looks like he's like the footwork is decent coming out of the dropbacks. It does need some work, but you look for those type of things. But the hand size conversation, and they listed poor Kenny Pickett. It just makes you think like he's got like carny hands, like little tiny weird, like I don't know. It's they showed the look and they said under the last hand size under 9 inches that made any sort of impact in the NFL was Michael Vick, and they showed the list of other guys under 9, and you're like, right. I don't know who those players are. That's not good for Kenny Pickett.
How do they measure, like, where is that? Is that like from the tip of your thumb to the tip of your middle finger? Is that where they're measuring?
I think it's tip of your thumb to your pinky finger.
Oh, to your pinky finger. Okay.
I believe that is what it is to get the full stretch.
What do you think your hand size is?
I don't know.
Genuinely very curious.
I'm looking around for a measuring tape. Oh,
I know, me too.
Maybe I got Kenny Pickett hands.
Right, because you're right, like the conversation around like quarterback hand size is honestly one of the funniest things I've ever seen. It's like like the way they go on about it, like, and I say they, like the media, which we are a part of certainly, but it just the way people go on about it makes it seem like oh, Kenny Pickett has small hands. It makes it sound like he can't even hold a football.
Can't hold it, right? It's like, oh, he's dropping it, he can't hold his coffee, he's spilling it everywhere. Like, oh, these hands, no. Well, they showed a funny tweet from Joe Burrow, who had 9-inch hands, and he tweeted out after the combine, he said, apparently my incredibly tiny hands will not allow me to, I'm announcing my retirement after I apparently have incredibly tiny hands. Please keep me in your thoughts.
So good.
Worked out for Joe. The whole point with the small hands is that you're going to fumble the ball, or it's cold weather, or it's wet, and that's what it is. You can see that, like, mitigated if you are a bit smarter with how you hold the ball. Hold it with two hands before you throw it, so if you get hit, it doesn't fly out of your toddler hands, I guess, right? That's really what I guess what you got to do if you're Kenny Pickett. Hold on to the football. Two hands.
I feel like I need to go back and look at all of the various, like, our favorite quarterbacks over the years and see what their hand size was. Like, what was Tom Brady's hand size, right? Like, what's Baker's hand size? I'm genuinely curious. I've never really thought about it before, but now I'm actually curious.
I forget what the exact size is, but they gave an example where, like, Russell Wilson is, they list him at 5'11", but
right.
It might be a bit shorter than that. But they said his hand size was, like, ridiculous. I think he had, like, 10-inch hands. It was, like, like freakish on the other side, which means, theoretically, grab the football real good and sling it, and it won't fall out of your hands. So that's where, when you hear hand size, that's where it all comes in. And at 6'3¼", you would think he would have, you'd want that, you know, 9.5-plus-inch hand for the ball. So we'll see. Kenny Pickett, to me, really lines up as this year's version of Mac Jones, a more mobile Mac Jones show, where he might not have the highest ceiling, but he's going to be the most day one ready guy. So if there's a team that's like, okay, I need a guy right now who's smart, who is more mobile than Mac Jones, but probably isn't going to lead the most comebacks, but isn't going to cost me a game, Kenny Pickett's that guy for me.
Denver, maybe?
Could be Denver, you know. I think if you're Denver, you just have to, maybe you do play it safe. Like, I see Denver going one of two ways. You either are like, all right, let's see. This Malik Willis, he's either going to be really good or he's going to suck. Let's go. Or you say, all right, Kenny Pickett, you know, is he as much of an upgrade over your boy Drew Locke, lock on lock? You hope so if you're a Denver fan.
You'd have
fan,
to
but,
be, right? You'd have to be.
Woo, boy. Old Drew is on his way out, but. Yeah, lots of interest. Oh, fantasy football, real life-wise, lots of fun. And we'll continue with NFL free agency, which is coming up quick next week, and reaction out of the combine as well. But up next, show, it's time for our debut, our fantasy wrestling section of the show. And we are giving away pizza. Pizza contest. If you pick the most right matches from the AEW, the All Elite Wrestling Revolution pay-per-view tonight. We're going to do WrestleMania stuff coming up in coming weeks as well. A fan wrestling listener league from our friends at DropTheBelt.com, which is a tremendous... It's the best fantasy wrestling site I've ever seen, and it's just perfect. You got to check it out. But we're going to pick our pay-per-view AEW Revolution matches. We have them on Twitter, at The Fantasy Show. Right now, you can head there. Make your picks. Text in your picks as well. We'll list out the matches when we come back. See who you can win some pizza. Talk a little fantasy wrestling to wrap up the fantasy show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to The Fantasy Show. Hello, everybody. Andy McNamara, Show Ali. Time for fantasy wrestling. I'm very excited about this.
I can
show.
Tell.
We talked a lot of combine, a lot of NFL.
My goodness.
Some hockey. But now, listen, show, if there was a world where I could just go around and just talk in, like, heel promos, which I feel I have to catch myself a lot of times of just going off, I would. But man. Wrestling is so amazing. It's so good. And I got connected with these guys, DropTheBelt.com. Because, what you know, we do the fantasy show, and we talked about before, NFL offseason. You're like, okay, you know, we got hockey, basketball, baseball still. What's going to happen there? So just some things to mix it up in the offseason. I thought, well, is there something fantasy wrestling? And I came across this site, DropTheBelt.com. These dudes are awesome. They're out of Las Vegas. Chatted with them. And the site's amazing. It sets up, you can go, whether it's WWE or AEW, you can go into leagues. You can go into, so you get, like, fantasy points off of, is somebody open the show? Does somebody use a foreign object? Does somebody get a win? Like, it's very in-depth. And they also have the Pick'em contest, which we'll do for WrestleMania in a few weeks. But tonight, it's the big All Elite Wrestling AEW Revolution pay-per-view. So we put out a contest for some people to win some Domino's pizza if they get the most right.
Yeah, please text in your picks to us. You can, I mean, you can text them in at 590-590. You can tweet them in as well, at AndyMC81 for Andy, at SNS Alley for me, at the Fantasy Show, or at Fan590. And so you can get their picks to us in any number of ways. We've gotten a couple on Twitter already. Mm-hmm. But yeah, please text in your picks. And do you want to list the – I mean, you already listed it for Russell, but just again, do you want to list the matches that we are asking people to pick for?
Yes. So I'll list the matches here that you guys will pick at. And if you get the most right, if there's any ties, you get put into a draw. Winner gets a big pizza prize. So this is what you're going to pick. Le Champion, Canada's own, Chris Jericho versus Eddie Kingston. Brian Danielson versus John Moxley, an old WWE rivalry coming in a big way. This match is going to be awesome to AEW. Then CM Punk versus MJF in a dog collar match. We'll talk about that. Brutal. It's going to be great. Tag title matchup. Champions Jurassic Express, Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, managed by Christian Cage, versus Red Dragon, Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, versus the Young Bucks, Nick and Matt Jackson. So three-way match for the tag title. And then the World Championship, former Bullet Club members, Hangman Adam Page versus Adam Cole, who is undefeated in sanctioned matches in AEW and has been a champ wherever he goes. Those matches, you can tweet those in your picks at The Fantasy Show, at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, and text 590-590, name and location. We'll also bring in our technical director, Josh Santos, who's a massive wrestling fan. And when I told him this idea, he was like, yes, I want on. I'm in. Josh, are you ready for Revolution?
I am. I am so ready for this. I'm really excited. I can't. I'm speechless. I'm excited.
Okay. Well, you know what? So we'll go through these five matches here, and we'll give our sort of takes and the why. And so let's, Josh, you know what? Let's start with you. We'll go me and then show. And we'll begin with Chris Jericho versus Eddie Kingston, who Chris Jericho, 51 years old, 30 years in the business, has done it and reinvented himself in so many different ways. And under the radar, greatest of all time, just from how he's done it, versus Eddie Kingston. And Josh, I will say this. For the sake of my 8-year-old son, Nolan, who Chris Jericho is his favorite wrestler, he's got 2 Jericho shirts, he's got a Jericho toy, I'm hoping you're going to tell me that Jericho's going to win.
I'm all about disappointing 8-year-olds, so I'm going to pick Kingston for tonight. For me, this card's really difficult because I think every match anyone can win. It's really difficult to pick a winner, but I think Kingston's going over because I think Jericho's at the point where, like, I mean, the guy could lose the next 20 matches of his career and still be a legend. So, like, I think both guys don't really need the win, but Kingston can gain more from it. And so I'm going with Kingston.
I just don't think you need... Like, Eddie Kingston is a brawler type. He's one of those guys, I think, also, that doesn't need a win. He can lose, and it doesn't matter. You can put him in a street fight the next week. Like, he's a brawler. I don't see him as a future world champ. You know, he's 41 years old. Like, it's like, okay, I don't think he necessarily needs the rub from Chris Jericho. I'm more interested in the backstory behind it with the inner circle with Santana and Ortiz, and how that's going to all play in.
Well, that's why I think it's going to be Kingston, because I think that's not totally settled. And I think Kingston winning, maybe with a little bit of interference, I don't know, continue that storyline a little bit more as well. So I think it's going to be Kingston.
Could be a schmoz finish. Could be a DQ or something finish, right, too. I'll say Jericho. Santos says Eddie Kingston. Show, you're the tiebreaker.
I mean, how could I go away from Jericho, right? Canada's own Jericho? How can you not pick Jericho? Of all of the ones we're picking, I think that was the one. I didn't even look at the other one. I just, Chris Jericho's name? All right, click Chris Jericho. That's how I made that.
There it is. Yes.
Show, you're making me feel unpatriotic.
He's in great shape, too. 51.
He's 51? My God. Good for him.
51. I was watching Chris Jericho in high school. Like, it's crazy. And that was a long time ago, I assure you.
I was a child.
Next matchup, Brian Danielson, who in WWE, because Vince McMahon can't use somebody's real name, Daniel Bryan, which is always a little ridiculous, but he was great in WWE for a long time. John Moxley was Dean Ambrose. The storyline here is that One, Moxley has never beaten Danielson, and Bryan Danielson wants to link up with Moxley, who's sort of taken on a bit of a Stone Cold feel, where it's like rebel, comes in, beats people up, tough guy, wants to join forces with him, and Moxley said he doesn't stand with anyone who he hasn't bled with. So I just expect this one to be just a hard-hitting, bruised, bloody fest here. What do you think, Josh?
This is probably the hardest one for me all week. But I'm picking Danielson. I think there's arguments to be made for both guys, but I think I don't think this is going to be their last match, and I think the whole story about Moxley trying to overcome the American Dragon, if he does it here, then there's no more matches. So I think it's going to be Danielson.
I could see that, or maybe like a double DQ again, like kind of like a something to keep it going, you know? So I'll agree. I'll say Bryan Danielson brings it out, but they're both just like just covered in blood. And I hope it does end with a faction forming, because I think those two together could be really interesting, especially with the Inner Circle sort of breaking up and the Pinnacle sort of still there, but not really. Like we don't have necessarily a dominant faction outside of maybe the House of Black that's on the rise too. Mm-hmm. So, I'll say Danielson. Show Bryan Danielson v. John Moxley.
I decided to go with Danielson in this one. Bryan Danielson, like you mentioned, the name change from the WWE. But yeah, I think for this one, I'm taking Danielson.
So we got the three-peat for Danielson, two for Jericho, one for Eddie Kingston. Now this next one, guys, I love. And what I think the AEW does so well is they blend. If you're just a current fan watching, cool. But if you're a historical one, like guys, I have too many wrestling books and DVD sets than I care to admit from the history. This wrestling history going back. This dog collar match between CM Punk and MJF, I think the craftsmanship of this storyline has been impeccable, because the most famous dog collar match was in the early 1980s between Rowdy Roddy Piper and Greg the Hammer Valentine. A match that was so brutal, guys. A dog collar match, for those who don't know, you literally have dog collars around both wrestlers' necks. You're attached by a steel chain. And then you beat the crap out of each other until someone can't go anymore, pretty much. And that match, Rowdy Roddy Piper legitimately had partial hearing loss in his ear because he was whipped with the chain for the rest of his life. Valentine had like chunks of his arm, like scars and all that from that match. It changed these guys. And Punk is bringing that out with MJF, who has said, you know, CM Punk was his favorite wrestler, but he let him down because he quit. He loves Roddy Piper. This blend and this storyline, I'm going to say CM Punk wins it, but somehow I think this goes on. I don't think this is the end of this. What do you think, Josh?
I actually think it's the end because, I mean, this whole week I was going to agree with you. I was going to say it was going to be MJF. I thought he was going to win this, and either way, I didn't think that this feud was going to continue after tonight. I still believe that because after what happened with Wardlow and Dynamite, I think that's going to be I think he's going to cost MJF the match tonight. And I think CM Punk's going to take the win.
Oh. And then you spin off into an MJF, one. Interesting. Show, have you ever seen a dog collar match before?
Maybe one of those really old ones, but not like in recent memory. That's for sure.
This will be, like, if you don't like blood, folks, you don't watch this. These guys legit will beat the tar out of each other. And there was a picture show where, like, MJF met CM Punk when he was 11 years old, and now he has it like on a shirt, and he has like CM Punk's blood on it, and it's all crazy. It's gonna be entertaining no matter what. I say CM Punk. Josh says the same. What do you think?
Yeah, you know what? CM Punk is one of the few wrestlers I've actually gotten a chance to speak with on the air. So out of loyalty, out of loyalty to that interview, I am going to say CM Punk. So I guess we're all going CM Punk. We only have a couple minutes left. You guys want to just quickly run down the rest of your picks?
Yeah, and Punk, big Blackhawks fan. Okay, let's go quick. Tag titles, Jurassic Express, which is Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy, who are the champs, versus Red Dragon and Young Bucks. Now, Red Dragon and Young Bucks both did qualifying matches. Both friends with Adam Cole. There's the Japan link. There's WWE link. So there's a lot of infighting. I see Red Dragon and Young Bucks sort of starting to work together, then feud with each other, and Jurassic Express comes away with the title still. So I'll say Jurassic Express. Josh?
I'm going to agree with you with what happens in that match, but I'm going to take Red Dragons as the winner.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Ooh. I like it.
Okay.
I admittedly read this as re-dragon, and then you guys were like, red dragon. I'm like, okay, that's how you say it. I'm taking Jurassic Express, though. How can you not take a name like Jurassic Express? What a name. I'm taking it for sure, taking Jurassic
Express.
I know
we don't have a lot of time, but I don't think they call them that anymore. I think that they've kind of stopped. They just go with their individual wrestler names, which is, I think, is dumb.
It's a young boy and his dinosaur. He wears a dinosaur mask show and has horns on.
He's like 10 million years old.
They're going to win.
10 million years old. It's kind of nuts. Okay, last one. World title. Adam Hangman Page versus Adam Cole. Bullet Club members. There's history there. There's Adam Cole's won at every level. Adam Page. I think Adam Page comes away with the win, but there is some sort of, there's some spinoff where you can come back to it later and some way Red Dragon and Young Bucks get involved. To maybe it's Kenny Omega coming back. There's with the Elite. There's just going to be something that happens where Adam Page comes away with it. I don't think we're done with him as world champ quite yet. Although personally, I want Adam Cole to win. Josh,
I think it's going to be Adam Cole. I think at the end of the night, we're going to have Adam Cole, Red Dragon, and Britt Baker holding titles.
Wow, very interesting. Show Hangman or Cole?
I went with Adam Page because he has a cool name, Hangman. So there you go.
It is pretty cool. He's the Urban Cowboy. All right. So, folks, those matches we picked, they're on Twitter. We said them. They're on text. Send them in. And if you are correct, if you get the most right, you will be entered in to win a big, big, big pizza prize. So make sure you get it in. Matches are on Twitter at The Fantasy Show or text them in 590-590. For Santos, for Show, I'm Andy. This has been The Fantasy Show, and you've been listening across the Sportsnet Radio Network.